Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
You are back in the House of Mystery, and I'm at the controls, Al Warren, and co-hosting from the East Coast today. It's our reporter on the street, David North Martino. How you doing, Dave?
I'm great, Al. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you really don't sound like you're from Boston.
I know, right?
Why?
I've been hiding everything. Smoking. It's all smoke and mirrors.
There is no Boston. It's a conspiracy.
It is. It doesn't exist.
Well, the flat earthers, you see how it's not. There is no Australia.
Well, that's true.
Right? They said there's no such thing. So anybody you've ever met from Australia is not an Australian. They're in on it.
They are.
They are. Just so be aware. Next time you're out shopping and you hear an Australian accent, be aware that they're part of the big plan.
I will keep that in mind.
I don't know what kind of plan that is. But
I don't know either.
But keep your eye out. Follow them. Report on them.
And I will.
Let us know. We'll break in.
Late breaking report.
Yeah, but don't make yourself obvious. Okay?
I won't. Yeah.
Pretend you're Australian. Now you can't even sound like you're from Boston. That's not going to work.
Good day.
Yeah. Oh, no. No,
no, okay. It didn't work.
Just don't. Say nothing.
No.
Well, today we are in the world of writing, and we are going to go a little inside writing with an international best-selling author. So on the line, we've got V.S. Holmes. Thank you for being here, V.S. Holmes.
Thanks so much for having me. This is great.
Well, we'll see if you say that at the end of the show.
I too, am from the East Coast, so I...
You know. Uh-oh. Well, you have to be careful.
Which doesn't exist.
Yeah, right. It doesn't exist. You're all in on the conspiracy.
I see.
The world is flat. There is no moon. It's all fake. Oh, geez. Well, you know, but that brings up, you know, when I talk about that, I laugh because, you know, we had the flat earthers on, and that's sort of why I do that. But, well, they're really into it. You know, they're great. But you kind of write in a fantasy sort of fiction, don't you, in a sense? So, I mean, what do you consider yourself? What kind of writer would you call yourself if someone asked?
Frantic. No. I write sci-fi fantasy, and sort of the more literary term, I guess, would be speculative fiction, depending on how snotty you want to sound. that's not fair, but
I was asked that. You know, it was funny because we were doing an interview with someone that said they were speculative fiction, and I know the co-host who was from the UK at the time, she said, what's that? What does that mean? And I really didn't know how to answer. I don't know what that means. I guess it's highbrow, but what is speculative anything? Is it just, what does that mean when they say that?
I think, I mean, the way I use it is sort of as a bit more of an umbrella term for the world that you're crafting, you know, if it's a different planet or a completely different universe from ours, or fantasy universe, you know, or sci-fi, but also it also incorporates the stories that we write that are a little bit maybe quieter, you know, a lot of fabulism or magical realism, I think, can also go under that umbrella. So it's just a little bit broader, and it's easier than, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, horror, you know, you know, saying all these things. But I do think that there is a bit of a highbrow history to the term, for sure.
Yeah. So our flat earthers writing a book, that would sort of be in that area?
I mean, I guess it depends on if you're asking them or asking
right, me. Right. For them, it's true crime, actually, for them, because it's, you know, it's planned, right? But so this must be a great category to be in as a writer. Well, and especially these days, because, you know, there are so many conspiratorial thinkers out there. There's so many people doing these, you know, the Jewish laser beams and all this stuff's going on right now, and the fake snow in Texas. You know, all this. So with that kind of thinking, it must be a good thing to be in.
I mean, yes and no. They're stealing all our ideas. And it's a little difficult, too, because, you know, the whole fact is stranger than fiction thing. You know, if I were writing half the stuff that's happening in the world, you know, I'd be laughed at. You know, this isn't realistic, which I always think it's funny when someone makes that argument with sci-fi and fantasy, because it's like, well, but dragons, though, guys. But, yeah, it's kind of funny, because it's like, I couldn't write this and not be laughed at. But it is, you know, there's a lot of fuel, and at least now we can write whatever ridiculous stuff we want and know, well, it actually could happen, though.
Does it ever worry you that some of these people would latch on to you and some of your stories and kind of go, wow, this is happening, you know, that they start following you because they think, oh,
I'm preaching.
Yeah, like you know something. You're part of the conspiracy. Maybe you're in on it. And but you ever think that, because a lot of what people say, like when you go back in time, I find this fascinating, because when we go back to things like, look at Dracula. Dracula was a complete fiction, but look how real people have made it. How mm-hmm. humans now go around pretending or thinking they're vampires and drinking each other's bloods and doing all sorts of, so, but that completely come from a fictional mind. It wasn't something that was going on that people heard in the news and decided, well, I'm going to do that. So people actually have bought into, I'm a vampire, you know?
Oh, no kidding. I mean, I might have dated one of those, yeah. But
you made it out alive. So.
Until I figured it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be interesting. I'd be a little flattered, I think, if someone were to latch on, but in so far as my science fiction goes, you know, I have a disclaimer at the front of the book that says, you know, I don't actually believe in ancient aliens, and I don't think that aliens had anything to do with anything that humans have built. You know, we're quite capable. And I think part of that is not just so that if, like, my coworkers read it, you know, they think I'm a loon, but also because I don't want to perpetuate some of those things, because, well, I mean, a lot of it can be kind of funny on the surface. You know, there are some nasty roots to a lot of those beliefs. And so I sort of try and temper it. But, you know, if someone's not hurting anyone, I'm like, sure, go ahead.
I don't think any, you know, a lot of times, you know, as these stories go over the years and generations, the newer people that follow in don't have the evil intention or thought behind the original idea.
Right.
So it's, you know, for them, it's totally, they jump in and go, yeah, this is it. You know, they get into it and that, but it's kind of, I don't know. I think the whole thing's crazy, but,
yeah.
But maybe I'm crazy and everyone else is sane, right?
I mean, I guess it's all a matter of perspective.
Well, exactly. So how did you decide that you wanted to be a writer, and especially in kind of this speculative or sci-fi fantasy area? How did it start for you?
I mean, I've always been drawn to storytelling, and I was an only child, and I grew up in the woods, so there wasn't a whole lot of human interaction for me to, you know.
Did you stay at grandma's house, three little bears? Or?
Essentially, my parents would just let me wander off into the woods, and, you know, they kept binoculars by the sink to make sure they could still see me bobbing around out there. But, you know, I was alone a lot of the time, and so I had a lot of imagination to keep myself company. And that kind of naturally transferred into storytelling as I got older, though, you know, we won't talk about the first forays into writing that I did. They don't need to ever see the light of day. No. But, I did that. And then, you know, I read a lot as a kid, and a lot of what I was drawn to were the science fiction fantasy stories. You know, my dad read me The Hobbit when I was really little, and though TV wasn't really a thing in my house, the movies that I was allowed to watch were, you know, like the Nature Show and Cosmos and Contact and things like that. My dad was a sci-fi fan, so I sort of naturally came to those worlds, as I was consuming things, and then that's just where I went when I decided to actually sit down and take writing, you know, professionally at the end of my university career. And yeah, it was just, I wanted to make worlds. You know, I think a lot of speculative fiction is dreaming about the worlds we want ours to become, or maybe the worlds we fear ours will become, depending on how dark you get there. Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't happy with where my world was, so I wanted to make a new one, and that kind of became the various worlds that I've created, though. I definitely think they're darker.
Oh, well, so in a way it's an escape.
Yes. It's both an escape and also a roadmap, I think.
But when you're a sci-fi writer, now get this, because I'm nonfiction and all that sort of stuff, so I don't do this sort of thing. when you actually are looking for a better world or a darker world or just a different world, whatever way you want to go. As a sci-fi writer, doesn't that make you expose kind of some of your own feelings?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially just the past few years, as everyone has, you know, there's been a lot going on in the world and a lot to deal with. And I was just talking to one of my other friends recently about, I feel like I just, like, ripped open my chest with a lot of the stuff I've been writing over the past 2 years, and now there's just literary blood, like, everywhere. I have to try and, you know, clean up the mess.
You better clean up.
I'm up trying. But definitely, I think, you know, at first, you know, my first few books, I was a bit more reserved with how much of my emotions I was putting into it. You know, they're real, and, like, we put a bit of ourselves into all of our characters, but to a lesser extent with those early ones, because I either wasn't sure if I could go there or if I was comfortable going there just as a person. And I think my writing has improved as I've allowed myself to go there and go there with my readers too, in a lot of ways. But yeah, it can get a little emotional.
but then you see, this is kind of a point where I've learned to do this over 20 books, so I can put myself out there more so now. But in a true crime or a cult book, I don't have to, like, let's say, a fiction writer, and especially like what you're saying. So when you expose your feelings and expose how you're kind of exposing kind of how you think and how you live, does that so for me, that takes a lot of courage. So do you ever worry about that, or do you ever worry what you can talk about in a book, or what you can express in some of these stories as compared to, you know, someone like me? Like, do you ever worry that, I don't know, maybe with social media and everything, or does it, like, how do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, it's complicated. So in some ways, you know, I have a shield that you don't, because you write nonfiction. And I can just say it's the character. I can say it's not real. You know, I don't, but I could. And, you know, I don't really believe in separating the art from the artist, because it does come from somewhere, you know, even if it's accidental. But in a lot of ways, I feel like I can be more honest with my fiction, because it's the only place I really can be and be safe about it, because, you know, I'm a pretty online person with, like, the capital O or whatever. You know, I have all the various social medias, and I'm also a queer person, and so I'm out online, and I try to be, you know, out to some extent in my daily life, but it's not really possible. And so when someone encounters my feelings in my books, you know, that's, for me, that's safer than when someone just encounters me existing as a person on the street. You know, you're less likely to get actually harmed, you know, when you're writing fiction in a lot of ways. But I do, you know, I do get backlash because of the characters I write. You know, I write queer characters, I write disabled characters, and I do get backlash, but I think it's worth the good that it does, and it's worth connecting with people who can actually see themselves in my work, maybe for the first time in a long time, or for the first time ever. That's, to me, that's worth the danger.
So are your characters coming from a real person or a real place? I mean, obviously you're sharing some of your own experience, and that's how you can express yourself, right? But where do your characters in your stories come from?
God, I don't know. No, they, you know, they kind of, they don't spring fully formed from my brain. You know, that's not a thing for me. I think every author is different, but for me, most of my stories have started with just a single scene will kind of pop into my head, like, oh, that's fun, you know, daydream. And then I'll start asking myself questions about that character. And, you know, like, why is this archaeologist so ticked off about their site being vandalized? You know, like, is it just because it was vandalized? Well, who vandalized it? You know, that kind of thing. And as I ask myself those questions, who that character is kind of comes forth. And of course, I try to not always write the same character. And each of them has a different part of who I am, I think, in them. Some, you know, it's more superficial, and some, it's, you know, maybe no one would notice that they have a part of me in them.
So are you, but do you dig for people? Like, do you, you know, if you're out in a store and someone's in the lineup, or if you're at a coffee shop, or even at work and something like that, does that kind of give you ideas for characters?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people watching is fantastic. But I also sort of had to chuckle when you said dig. My day job is as an archaeologist, and we travel to all these different, you know, usually fairly rural areas, but also, you know, sometimes we're working in cities. We travel to all these really cool places, and there's some incredibly colorful characters that we work with. or, you know, wish we didn't work with, depending on who they are. And, you know, I, again, like the whole fact is stranger than fiction. Half the people, I have to tone them down because people wouldn't believe the type of human that I encounter. So I definitely have a lot of inspiration from that as well. Just some really, really cool people and really cool places that I've been.
Have you ever had a character surprise you?
Oh yeah.
With what they've done?
one of my favorites. And like, I don't really subscribe to the whole, like, they're actually talking to me, I can't control them thing. That's just sort of not how I look at my writing, but I have had, I guess, inspiration strike in a way that really surprised me, particularly with my character Bren from my epic fantasy series. And initially I was writing him to show the enemy's side of things, you know, the quote bad guys, though I try not to write good guys and bad guys. They're all sort of morally gray. But he was just supposed to be this bad guy. And then I started writing him, and he turned into one of the three main characters, and he had this deep connection with one of the other characters that I hadn't really planned on. And I mean, I had to trash like the whole second half of the book that I'd already written. But yeah, he really surprised me for sure. And I've had a lot of side characters sort of surprise me in ways that are really fun. I think that's one of my favorite parts of the writing process when I'm still in that discovery mode.
You know, that's really weird, because like Dave writes kind of like your style of writing, and he hears voices in his head. Completely insane. Do not ever be in a room alone with him.
Well, you know, the thing is, I can't really listen to like music with lots of rhythm and lots of lyrics. It kind of drowns out that I don't know, or the voices in my head, but you know, just the rhythm of the language.
Yeah. Now, this is sort of a tangent, and I apologize for that, but I remember there was a thing going around the internet about people who actually like have the inner monologue, like words, and then people who just think in like visual concepts. And I wonder if that's where that's coming from. Are you an inner monologue person?
I am.
Yeah. See, I'm not. Yeah. It's just all concepts and images. There's no words.
Okay.
So I also don't listen to a lot of lyrics when I write, but I do listen to a lot of instrumental music. So I wonder if that's part of it.
That's probably like the witch we interviewed earlier this week, that everything is visual.
Mm.
Remember, she said everything was all put in her head. It was all pictures and stuff. Yeah. Nothing, no words. So, and then that leads me to the next question with that being the case, what do you consider your characters, like the characters you've written, how do you feel about them?
Oh, like just as people or like?
Yeah, we see this. Okay. Yeah, no, I know. Well, we see, cause this is really insane for a nonfiction writer, right? Cause we've been interviewing 5 a week for a long time. And I get a lot of, well, they're like my kids. They're like, you know, you get all these family and emotional ties to the characters. And I'm thinking, well, this is completely insane.
I see. I'm not like that. I have characters who mean a lot to me. Not necessarily the ones that you might think. Especially when it comes to main characters. Well, I mean, some of them, yeah, but others are, they're fine. You know, they serve their purpose for the plot, but there are a few that, like, you know, I would defend them with my life kind of deal, but, you know, it's much more, I think I have a lot more distance between myself and them when it comes to like I know I created them. I know that I can also just write them out if I needed to, you know, assuming the book isn't published yet. But to me, I think my connection to my characters is much deeper insofar as how readers are connecting to them. You know, if someone writes me and says, oh my God, like I saw myself in Nell, and the way she deals with her anger is just so powerful to me. You know, that means more to me than simply writing a scene where she loses her temper or anything like that. I do love them, you know, and I will get like ticked off if someone is saying something nasty about them for, you know, non like constructive critical reasons.
Well, none of that goes on.
No.
No. Nobody does that.
No, never.
Everyone's just perfectly. Well, you know, but so do you ever kill off people that you hate?
I mean,
come on. No, because I asked this because one of the very first fiction writers I ever had on the show was J.D. Horn, and he's like a New York Times bestseller, and I said that to him, and he said, yeah, actually, if there's someone in the lineup, that was his example, that would be rude or cut in front of him or something, he takes that character, and when he needs someone to kill, that's who he kills.
I tend to kill the ones that I really like. not always. There's one that I really enjoy that I like. I know someone was saying, like, can he please die? He's a monster. He's a total jerk. Please die. And I'm like, no, he stays forever. But I I think for me, it's a bit more, you know, I'll maybe write in a few side characters, but it's more like if I meet someone who's a jerk in real life, I might take inspiration from them, but I don't usually kill them off. There are a lot of bodies in my books, but I try to pull the heartstrings with them more than the, you know, oh yeah, that guy's finally dead.
Well, so that would be an interesting story. Your characters control you.
Yeah, well, the question that a lot of people ask is like, oh, who would you want to sit down with over coffee? Like, what, which of your characters? And it's like, they'd poison my coffee. Like, I wouldn't want to.
Well, there you go. Yeah, and don't take a drink from Dave either. He's hearing these voices. Huh?
Yeah.
You know. Wow. So what is the most important part of sci-fi fantasy writing?
For me, it's making the worlds we want to see. It's weaving the hope into the darkness. You know, I love making these really dark, difficult worlds and then showing that we can still find a place for ourselves in them and find a way to get out of it. You know, I think a lot of us turn to fiction because it's easier to find solutions to our problems there because we're not really looking for them. And I try and incorporate.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, better get 30, better get 20, 20, 20, better get 20, 20, better get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Incorporate that into my work, but I really think the most impactful books I've read have been speculative, you know, whether it's sci-fi or fantasy, because I wasn't expecting that roadmap or that helping hand. And to me, I think that means the most.
Do you have an underlying subtext in the story? Is there something you want people to take away from the book besides the world you created?
Definitely. I mean, it varies from project to project, and I don't always know what it is, I think, when I first set out. Maybe about halfway through, two-thirds of the way through my process, I'll kind of distill what I'm like, what the heck my point is, I guess. And usually it has to do with the connection to each other and the connection through the past and to the future of where we're going, where we're coming from. And there's, you know, a lot of cyclical, you know, themes, death themes, things like that. Sort of going back to my work as an archaeologist, you know, looking at the past and looking at the future and how those things aren't really distinct from one another.
So when you get to the right now your newest book coming out is called Heretics.
Yes.
What's the premise of this book?
So it's the fourth in my sci-fi series, which is the Star's Edge Nell Bentley books. And the series as a whole follows Dr. Nell Bentley, who is a foul-mouthed, foul-tempered archaeologist. And in the first book, she discovers that her, like, pristine, career-making dig site is actually the center of an intergalactic feud. And she's thrust into this high-tech, higher-stakes kind of world. And so the books follow her as she comes into contact with a lot of things she wasn't prepared to believe in and still, frankly, would rather she didn't. And book four, she's actually returning to Earth from being not on Earth in the previous book. And she and her on-again-off-again girlfriend Lynn are tracking this killer sound wave, hoping to get ahead of it before it actually destroys Earth the way it destroyed the planet that they were excavating in the previous book.
Well, Earth isn't that great anyway.
I did incorporate a little bit of the pandemic into it, but it's like a footnote.
Oh, really? So you haven't shied away from the pandemic thing going on?
I mentioned it, you know, it takes place technically a couple years in the future. I don't really set a hard year just to give myself some wiggle room. And there's been some multiple year-long cryo sleep trips that they've gone on to. But yeah, I wanted to mention it because she comes back to Earth and she's really excited to be home and she hasn't been there in a really long time. And she sees all these stickers saying, you know, keep your distance, keep 2 meters apart, and, you know, wear your masks. And it's just such an apocalyptic thing to see even in my own world that I wanted to incorporate that sense of, like, this isn't the world that I left. Because I think as a lot of us return to some of our more normal behaviors, as it's safe to do so, I think there's going to be a lot of that feeling.
So do you have anti-maskers and that in your book, too?
they actually have a vaccine.
By Bill Gates?
Well, that's the thing. The organization that she's is sort of grudgingly working for developed one, and that was their big reveal, like, by the way, we kind of have our fingers in a lot of pies, and we have this great vaccine, and isn't it wonderful? Haven't we saved you all? We might actually control the world. So there's some undercurrents there.
Yeah, George Soros.
Yes.
I got it now. A description in for your book, and it's Alien meets Laura Croft in this queer, snarky science fiction adventure. Okay, when you use the word queer, what does queer mean to you? And I take this in a way of because you know I'm a gay man and I've been that way all my life, but I'm 59, and so back in the younger days when I was a kid, or just you know in the 70s and even the 80s, queer was a very negative word.
Yes,
and it was always used to put you down type thing. And I remember that. And so just recently I noticed some of the national magazines and papers kind of using that word. And someone actually, my accountant actually sent me a note saying, you know, she was totally upset with this and wrote the editor a letter because they talked about the queer community. And it's like what a terrible word to use. And I'm thinking, well, it seems to be coming back. So how would you explain queer?
I mean, I think it's one of those words that, you know, has been fairly successfully reclaimed for the most part. And for me, I use it, you know, I use it in broad terms. You know, I wouldn't necessarily use it for a specific individual unless if I knew that they were comfortable with it, because, you know, there are a lot of people like yourself who are much more familiar with it being used as a slur and as an attack. But I use it for myself because it's a lot easier than listing off all the initials. And a lot of times, you know,
LGBTQRSVWXNY.
Exactly. And, you know, I might be talking to someone who isn't, you know, that doesn't know what half of those letters stand for. And for myself too, it's easier than, you know, maybe I don't want to disclose all the ways I feel queer to a random person. And so I use that because it's more comfortable. But, you know, I think a lot of people that I've seen who use it for themselves also, you know, it's easier than saying like, well, I'm this, I'm that. And maybe that definition might change, you know, our ideas, especially when it comes to gender, you know, our ideas of who we are often do change, you know. And I think that sort of leaves that wiggle room. For me, it's that. And it's also, it leaves a little bit room for maybe my characters to go on that journey themselves.
So it gives you a little bit more fluid.
Yeah, it's a little less specific. And at least when it comes to, you know, broad terms, I think it can be a little bit more inclusive as long as, you know, you're referring to the right people.
Yeah, and that kind of makes sense now that I think about it. I don't have a negative feeling with the word because, you know, I understand some people use it that way, but it's like fag. It's like a lot of these words. I'm not really into giving power to any of these words. It's really where the heart is. It's where people come from. You know, if someone hates you, they hate you. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Really, you know, their actions will speak louder than any of these words. But I like that idea. That's a good kind of explanation so people hopefully can understand it better. Does that make it more difficult for you as well, writing?
Oh, I mean, of course it does. but I think it also maybe, and this is maybe a chicken or egg thing, you know, I don't know if it's that writing has helped me explore these things or if I was exploring these things, you know, before that. But I do find myself as I'm writing different identities, you know, I might find something that fits in a way that I didn't expect it to. And I have to kind of sit back and think, why is that? But I think maybe because I'm coming from the perspective of someone who is queer and who has had to explore these things, you know, before you come out and tell people about it, you want to be sure you know what you're talking about. You know, I think in some ways it's given me a lot more freedom to explore who I am. And I think some people who maybe haven't had that opportunity haven't gotten to like really delve into who they are as a person because they haven't had the excuse to. I think it's great that, you know, that I can do that, and people should probably do that a little bit more. And writing sort of gives me a sandbox to do that. But, you know, of course, there's the natural flack of like, well, I don't see why you need to include this character, you know, this love scene between these characters when they probably wouldn't say the same thing about, you know, a straight love scene.
Right. Well, does that worry you in a way as a writer that maybe some people will just not give you a chance, just write this off? Well, it's just a queer thing, you know.
I mean, yes, but the way I look at it is, you know, I'm not writing for everyone. I'm writing for someone, and I'm writing for maybe a smaller audience than some of the other authors might be. But I would much rather have, you know, like 100 diehard fans whose lives I've really impacted than 100,000, you know, mediocre fans who kind of remember the story but weren't, you know, deeply, profoundly impacted. And it is a trade-off, but that's just how I choose to go about it. And also, I mean, if they don't like my work, that's okay. You know, they don't have to.
Hmm. Do you have, so when you've got, this is the fourth book, I believe you said. So your Dr. Nell Bentley, how do you decide to have that main character evolve over four books? And also, do you find it difficult to do that?
I set out to write a single novel, and then it turns into four books, or in the case of Nell's story, it's actually going to be six. And I think that's almost easier for me. I do write short fiction, but not, you know, not to the same degree. And I really enjoy having the time to like get into her head. Especially, you know, I try to write complex characters. I try to write characters who are imperfect, who change their minds, who, you know, make bad choices. And she makes a lot of bad choices. and so that length, helps me have the time to do that. And then also, you know, incorporate all the stuff that people want, you know, the explosions and the, you know, life or death scenes and the electro guns and things like that. But I do really try and get into her head throughout that arc. And, you know, she's definitely changed from, she's still hot-headed, but, you know, she started therapy and she's trying to figure out why she's angry and why she's just angry at everything. And I kind of wanted to dump that angry lesbian trope, on its on its head and say like, well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to be like ticked off about.
Well, yeah, she doesn't throw beer at everybody.
No. Yeah, I think that's really one of the things I love about writing series is you have that time to get into these characters, you know, inner workings, and especially with fantasy where I have multiple point of view characters, you know, I need that length to get there.
Yeah, yeah, it gives you more room, you know, and that. So who would you go to, or who do you read in that type of writing, in the sci-fi fantasy and all that, or do you not read any other writers like that?
Oh, I definitely do. I sort of had like reader's block over the past few years. It was very difficult for me to pick up books, actually. And, you know, I was dealing with, obviously, pandemic, and then before that, my dad had just passed, and so I was struggling to actually just pick up a book, but I've gotten back into the saddle. I'm currently reading Myra Grant's Into the Drowning Deep, which is speculative. It's, I don't want to give too much away. It's a journey into the Mariana Trench, you know, trying to debunk this mockumentary thing that actually might have been real. So that's been really fun. There's, you know, dark mermaids, and I'm absolutely terrified of water, so it's been really, really scary for me, and I like that. I like scaring myself. so I've been reading her, and then I also have been reading a lot of sort of dark romance and gothic romance. I got really into horror during the pandemic too. I was like, well, let's get all the doom here. So I was reading,
go over the edge.
Exactly. I was reading, S.T. Gibson. She wrote a really cool retelling of Dracula, speaking of vampires.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's sort of where I've been. Of course I got my start with Tolkien and, you know, the classics, but I think there's a lot of really incredible things being done with some of the newer speculative works.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. Do you have a favorite work that you've written?
Ooh, yes. I really enjoyed writing the last book in my Blood of Titans world, which is Blood and Mercy. I went to some kind of strange places with it that I wasn't really anticipating going when I first set out writing it. And I had a lot of fun kind of playing around with that and where the characters went and the idea of reluctant gods and, you know, this guy who has this divine power and just wants to go hang out in the inn with his boyfriend and really have nothing to do with this god business. So that was really fun. And I'm really enjoying writing Fugitives, which is the fifth Nell Bentley book. I don't know if it's my favorite. But
I know you work archaeology into your novels. Do you have any other hobbies or activities that inform your work that you draw from to create story?
I collect natural curiosities, so I have a lot of bones. Like, our house is filled with skulls of various, you know, non-human animals. There's only one human skull, other than our own that we're using currently. Yeah, I really like biology and death and you know, mortuary stuff and, you know, the kind of morbid. So I like to incorporate a lot of visceral stuff, you know, with space and all the things that can happen to the human body in space and with advanced technology. And then, you know, with fantasy and how magic can change our bodies. I kind of like to get into the gross part.
I wonder, you know, for me, when I go back to some of my earliest books, I cringe. I'm not real excited about it. And when someone says, oh, I love that book, I kind of want to, I have an eye twitch that kind of starts. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't feel that comfortable with my earlier stuff. And I think if I had a chance to write them over again now, I would. Do you ever get that feeling too?
Oh, definitely. You know, like I think I mentioned, you know, before with my first two books, I was a bit more reserved with where I was going with them. And I feel like I could have done them better. And I did actually go back. I re-released the first one, and I did go back and add a few things. But, you know, of course it's already out in the world and the series is already out in the world. So I couldn't go back completely, you know, go from scratch. But I did. I did, you know, add a few things and tweak a few things here. Nothing, you know, plot, you know, deep plot wise, but definitely some things. And, you know, it was nice, but nothing's ever going to be perfect. And I got a little bogged down in that feeling of like that cringe. And like, I don't want, you know, what if someone buys it now? What if someone reads my latest book and then goes and buys my backlist? And it's like, well, what's this drivel?
Yeah.
But I didn't want to, I think you can get trapped by that. And I've tried to switch my mentality to make this the best it can be, the best this particular book needs to be for what you're doing right now, and then put it to bed. And, you know, if you're looking back at it and you want to change this, that, and the other thing, just put that in the next project that you're working on. And that's been helpful, but not easy.
No, it's crazy. I have people that read the last book and they go, oh, this is great. And they'll send you an email. And it's like, oh, I'd love to read another one of your books. Which one should I get? And I'm thinking, well, none of them. Don't go back, you know? And they always want to go back to my first one. And it's like, no. Mm-hmm. No.
It's tough.
Well, because I don't know. A lot of it's in your own mind, right? You know?
Yeah.
It's not probably as bad as I think, and it's just in my own mind. But anyway.
It's hard, though, because, like, with series, I have to go back. I have to remember what I named people and where I left them and who's dead and who's not. And so I have to go back and read. And, you know, there are scenes that I'm like, oh, God, really? Like, really? Did you do that? Come on now. But I also have been kind of pleasantly surprised with a few scenes. Like, actually, this isn't terrible. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, usually it isn't. I think for me, I think it's just the way you write, you know, mm-hmm. like your phrasing and how you put it together. It gets better each time you do a book and you go further into your life. So when you go back several books, you realize that you didn't have the experience putting it together. So it would be like reshaping something you had written, you know?
Right.
So, you know, like I said, it's just I'm a little bit nutty anyway. Right? That's my own problems. That's a different story. That's a whole other hour. We'll call Dr. Phil.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little funny to say.
So how do you like to be contacted by your fans or readers and stuff? Do you have a website or do you have something that people can come and give you really bad feedback?
I mean, I'd prefer not the really bad feedback, but I do like to know what people liked, what they want to see more of is a nice way to phrase it. I have a website, vsholmes.com, and I'm on Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest, so people can, you know, come follow me on there and see some sneak peeks and stuff like that. I also, on my website, I have a place where you can download Disciples, which is a prequel to the first Nell Bentley book, and also The Tempest, which is sort of a prequel. It's set in the same world as my epic fantasy, and you can download those to see if my stuff is up your alley.
Well, there you go. It better be a dark alley, too, right? Right. It's not a
content warning.
Yeah. Hey, so that's interesting. So you mentioned the pandemic and a few things. So this last year and a half, you know, it's been kind of a crazier, twisted time. You know, mm-hmm. you know, the Donald Trump stuff and all that thing, and the pandemic and cops shooting blacks, and mm-hmm. just everything going on. And that, does that change your writing, or does that affect how you write?
Oh, yes. This past, well, I'm going to say the past 2 years, because we were barely out of, like, the grief hole of losing my dad when the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. And it broke me. It utterly broke me. And I went from being a hardcore outliner, plotter, control freak to being completely unable to write. I actually had to start Heretics almost over from scratch, you know, with like a super close deadline looming, because I couldn't use what I'd written. And I realized that while I do thrive on structure, I was looking for structure in the wrong place, and I was putting it in my work where I really needed to have that initial sandbox creativity flow of just dumping scenes and seeing, you know, what scenes I liked the best and what scenes fit the best. And so, yeah, it completely almost 180'd my entire process, and I'm writing more, faster, and better than I ever have. Which has been really, really nice in a lot of ways. But I don't know if I would have liked to have it be a little easier way to discover that.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder, because when dark things are happening to you, it seeps into your writing, I guess, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a reason why the novels that I've published in the past 2 years and written, you know, are definitely my most honest, you know, about who humans are and who I would like humans to be, and maybe who I'm a little scared that humans are.
Humans are terrible.
Yeah, but humans
get,
are terrible.
Get a pet.
Yeah, that's why I have a dog, not a kid.
Yeah, I have dogs. Dave has a cat. You know, it's the pets are, you know, I think the pets, why they're so good, is because they're living now and today, and their mind is there, and they bring you back to earth no matter what's going on in your life.
Oh, for sure.
You know, there's like it's a grounding that they're there. You could sit there with your dog or cat and just kind of go, wow, because it's just now, it's the interaction you're having with them at that moment, and that's all that matters. And I think that's the key beauty in an animal that us humans a lot of times don't live with, you know. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's definitely true.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, but it's all right. We've got to stay happy.
Yes.
Don't worry, be happy. Well, it's certainly been interesting. So what's next for you? You've got Heretics coming out here. And I know as a writer, when I've got a book coming out, quite often I'm already on something else. So, So I guess I would imagine you're the same then.
Yeah. I mean, I already don't know what month it is, like between the pandemic, but also like focusing on, I thought it was May already. And it's like, no, that's just because everything I'm doing is going to happen in May.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I've got Heretics coming out on May 8th, and then I'm already halfway through Fugitives, book 5, and that'll be coming out October 5th of this year. And then just one more left in Nell's story arc. But I'm also sort of switching a little bit over to, I'm returning to my fantasy world, but in a, you know, totally new series, different characters, you know, maybe a few cameos, but otherwise fairly unrelated. I'm planning 4 books, sort of returning to that. And I've also got a kind of weird standalone back to like the dark death necromancy, but maybe make it sexy kind of thing that I'm working on as well, that I don't know what that's going to turn into. Wow. It's my sandbox project.
So you're kind of taking vacation then. You're not really not much going on.
Only 3 things I'm writing.
Yeah. Wow. To live so easy. Well, it's been a great interview, great hour. And our guest has been the author of Heretics, the new book coming out here in May. And that is V.S. Holmes. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Great conversation.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end! By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll tell you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.